This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. During Cybersecurity Awareness Month, LifeLock wants to give you helpful tips to protect your identity. Using multi-factor authentication can be a line of defense to help protect your personal information, like getting a text with a security code. But LifeLock offers comprehensive protection against identity theft. Protect your identity today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com/podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Financial Times. When it comes to voicing or acting on our opinions, why are some people more confident than others? With the Financial Times, you form your own opinions with conviction based on unbiased and trusted reporting. FT journalists tackle global issues with an impartial and rigorous mindset, providing the facts and analysis that you need to make up your own mind. Make up your own mind with Financial Times. Visit ft.com/thejournal to read free articles and subscribe.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Big hour coming your way. What a week it's been with hurricanes, and we'll touch on that and the damage done in North Carolina, South Carolina, parts of Virginia, and especially Florida. Got hit twice. It's going to cost millions of dollars and disrupted so many homes. We're going to talk about what's happening also with the election. Amy Sikma standing by, campaign reporter in Wisconsin for the New York Post. Wisconsin, suddenly it was almost out of reach for Trump, and now it's a dead heat or he's winning. At the bottom of the hour, Pastor Denny Doran, he's a head football coach and chancellor for the Evangelical Christian Academy over in Shreveport, Louisiana. How he wins, the role he plays, a new special and a series you're only going to see on Fox Nation. But before we get to Amy, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
I don't see how CBS gets away with not releasing the transcript. I mean, as a journalist, I'm happy to, you know, when you do a full interview, you're happy to release the full transcript. You should be happy to release it. That's a big part of journalistic ethics.
Michael Schellenberger, he knows all about it. Part of the Twitter files exposing all the corruption there. CBS in free fall as their credibility creators. First, with the bias editing of the Kamala Harris interview on 60 Minutes, which he was referring to. And then their condemnation of their own anchor for asking probing questions of an anti-Israeli author. Both stories are only getting bigger.
Number two.
I will put my record up against anyone in terms of the work I have always done and will always do to ensure we have a secure border.
Really? You've done nothing for 3.5 years. She claims to have done things when she was attorney general in California, but she wants to put her record against anyone? Immigration policy front and center for Americans this election as another special status migrant is found to be a terrorist. Migrant gangs plaguing major cities and groups once again are beginning to surge the Texas border. And she's proud of this?
Number one.
And the reason some people think, well, I don't know, I remember that economy when he first came in being pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good because it was my economy.
Yeah, when you came in, he took it over. You didn't do tax reform. You didn't cut regulations. You didn't start exporting oil and gas. And you didn't make us no longer, we were essentially independent energy producers. That had nothing to do with you, Barack Obama. In fact, you benefited from the boom on fracking, which also had nothing to do with you. Battle of the battlegrounds. The Trump camp is feeling better day by day of their chances of winning them. Admitting now, Democrats are, that the sugar high is over for Harris and calling in Obama as a closer. Will it work? Amy Sikma joins us now from the New York Post. Amy, welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Amy, first off, would you say President Obama is the most popular Democrat?
I don't know. I would say probably.
I think he's going to be coming to Wisconsin where you are. I think that he's going to start doing something. She even admitted Kamala Harris does not have the same energy that he had. I thoroughly agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's most telling in Milwaukee. I was just reading a report that the Democrats are kind of worried about turnout in Milwaukee. They've got Madison pretty locked up, which is a high population turnout that helps put Democrats, statewide Democrats, over the line in Wisconsin. But they're concerned about minority voters in Milwaukee. So, yeah, I could see him coming in to try to raise enthusiasm for that.
So you're focusing on Wisconsin, and I was talking to somebody about 3 weeks ago in the Trump camp, and I say, what are the battleground states do you feel as though you might have lost? And that person told me Wisconsin, and it was, I think, a six-point spread. Now, in almost every poll, he's either winning or tied. What happened?
Well, I think they caught up with where Wisconsin really is, which is that four out of six of the last presidential elections have been decided by less than 1%. And from what I'm seeing, it's the undecideds in the last month or two who come down. And in 2016, they broke for Trump. I think he's hoping that that repeats this time for him.
Right. Do you think he's paying enough attention to Wisconsin, Trump? Do you think both camps are?
Well, he did four visits in about 8 days over the last 2 weeks. So he's really, he's focused on it recently, and that could be part of what you're seeing in the surge in the polls. I would say the ground game here, that has been a constant criticism of him, and it's kind of an experiment, as far as I can tell, across the swing states, that he's really focused the money on hiring attorneys, lawsuits, poll watchers. And he's relying on third-party groups to do the ground game. And that's certainly been the case here in Wisconsin.
With super PACs, you mean, right?
Yes, yes.
So Charlie Kirk, I think, is one of the biggest.
Yes, and I was just hearing that I think Elon Musk is playing here as well. And then there's a lot of smaller Republican-aligned groups that are also working to turn out here. But it's... I think the question for people is it as well-oiled of a machine as the Democrats in their high turnout areas? And we don't know.
So you write that there's some areas in which Trump does grade out higher, even when he comes to, you said five areas, one of which is on the border. The other is on inflation. When it comes to fair trade, he seems to be leading. His greatest advantage would be on gas prices, right?
Yeah, and pretty much anything to do with the economy. That's where he pulls higher, sometimes on foreign affairs as well.
Which I think, if you look at the track record, if she's going to own Joe Biden's foreign affairs record, can you look at that any way except disastrous?
Yeah, I think that for voters, that is, for undecided especially, I think that that's really a key issue. You know, when I talk to people, the one thing I hear is I don't know if she can handle where things are at with the national scene right now. You know, people look at that with a lot of fear and uncertainty. And so that is the one critique I have heard from those in the middle.
I also think it's what about the farm community? You write that the farm incomes are forecasted to drop by over $40 billion in 2024. That means a lot to Wisconsin, doesn't it?
It does. And there's a 20% gap, you know, a 20-point margin that Trump seems to have with rural voters. And I was talking to farmers this week and, you know, the economy for them, these are business people. And so this impacts everything that they do as a business person running their farm. But it also impacts the food economy. Right. So, yes, they've talked to me about how hard it is to with the higher costs. For inflation, dairy farmers are not getting great prices for their milk right now, but their input costs are higher. So that is a concern for them. They're concerned about regulation. And we were talking specifically about Senator Tammy Baldwin and some dairy farmers who were telling me they just don't trust the Democrats on regulation and the economy.
Trump did talk a lot about farming. He did talk a lot about Canada and what's going on with the dairy farms and the inequity there. He was upset about the Europeans' deal with us. When it came to that, that's not my area of expertise. But do you find that the people thought that Trump paid attention to them?
Yeah. So the tariffs are really an interesting, like, for instance, the tariffs are an interesting split in Wisconsin because farmers ended up supporting it to a certain degree, not because they liked the financial hit they were taking, but because they were playing the long game and they saw Trump as playing the long game on that. In fact, Senator Baldwin, who did not support the tariffs, there's a political story saying that she's one of the reasons Biden kept them in place. And I think that's because there was a certain amount of this is a long game. We have to do this with Wisconsin manufacturers and farmers.
So I want you to hear what Mark Halperin said. He looked at this. He's not a Republican or a Democrat. He says he's independent. Cut 20.
Wall Street Journal has a story about Democrats really worried about the three Rust Belt states. We all know from our contacts in both campaigns that Pennsylvania is tough for her right now. And without Pennsylvania, there are paths, but there aren't many. There's no path without Wisconsin. So you see here, Tammy Baldwin's Senate campaign poll shows Harris down 3 in Wisconsin. We all said yesterday, Wisconsin and Michigan are looking worse for Harris than before.
Is that what you're hearing? And what do you think about that?
So I think Senator Baldwin is very savvy, and she's one who's not lost an election since she first came into the political scene back in the 90s. She's a savvy campaigner, and I think I was looking at the numbers. I can't remember exactly, but I don't think that she's had parity in spending from a challenger before. So she's looking at the whole game. She raised the alarm about Biden, you know, when he, after his debate performance, she wouldn't appear with him when he came to the state. She said publicly she was passing on worried messages from voters to the White House. So I think that was her move to say, you know, you're in trouble. At least Baldwin thinks that she is.
All right. So we'll see how much attention they're going to pay in the next 20 days. But is it safe to say, and by the way, we're talking to Amy Sikma, who's the campaign reporter for Wisconsin, writes for The New York Post. Is it safe to say that right now neither side has won it and will probably be won in the next 20 days?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I would say that Wisconsin is a place with, you know, basically, it could come down to 20,000 votes, and so nobody can give up in the next 20 days. That's for sure, and you can't make assumptions.
Where's the Senate race? With I hear Hovde is moving up.
He is. Yeah, he's gotten an influx of cash, and he shook up his campaign team a month ago, which, you know, normally wouldn't be a good sign, but it seems to be paying off for him. That's a race where it went from leans Democrat to a toss-up, and I think that took a lot of people by surprise just mm-hmm. because he was on the defense for a lot of the cycle so far.
So you know how much the Packers mean to Wisconsin.
Yes.
If there was somebody like Brett Favre who decided, I'm with Trump, would that make a difference?
I mean, it could. I couldn't say how much of a difference. So Marquette Law School poll is saying there's about 5% of undecided voters right now. And depending on how you break that down, independents, some seem to be leaning more to Trump. Harris does have some of an advantage. Right now, it's the turnout game, and it's convincing the undecideds. And I think that's where both campaigns are going to be focusing their efforts.
All right, Amy, thanks so much. One, if not the most important state this election cycle, and you got the beat. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it. 1-866-408-7669. We got Emerson polls in, Wall Street Journal polls. I'll go over both of them when we come back. Also bring you more insight on the left and right. I don't love the Wall Street Journal poll if you're a Trump fan. Emerson poll, which is usually unfriendly to Republicans, was extremely optimistic for Trump. So we'll take it with a grain of salt, but I'm not going to duck him. We'll watch. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. During Cybersecurity Awareness Month, LifeLock wants to give you helpful tips to protect your identity. Using multi-factor authentication can be a line of defense to help protect your personal information, like getting a text with a security code. But LifeLock offers comprehensive protection against identity theft. Protect your identity today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com/podcast.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I know prices are too high still. You know prices are too high still. And we have to deal with it. Here's how I feel about it. Again, you've heard my story. I come from the working class. I'm never going to forget where I come from.
Now it's working class? I thought it was middle class. By the way, you lived in Canada most of your life, and your mom was a cancer researcher. I know being a single parent is no joke. I don't care what you – I know it's tough. Got it. But please don't overstate what your youth was like. To me, you didn't grow up in Oakland. Oakland is real rugged. Worse ever, you served there. Number two is – you grew up on the other side. You were born in Oakland. You grew up in a middle-class area. Then you went to Canada. And judging by the neighborhood, someone did one of those drive-bys that you always see with Google Maps when they come by and they put the camera on top. It looks like a beautiful neighborhood. And we still don't have proof that you ever worked at McDonald's. And Trump is relentless on that. And she is not vigorously denying it or showing her old uniform or her old coworker. She just talks about timing fries. I'm not even sure if that's a thing. So that was her yesterday in the town hall. And this is what I'm talking about. She is trailing Trump with Latino men, 51-47 in Arizona. With Nevada, 53-40. Oh, the latest national Hispanic polling has Trump 52-44. And then they have the other candidates. Now that RFK's in there, it's not worth it. On the Q poll, Axios is saying there's growing concern among Dems that her media appearances and heavy spending and favorable coverage don't seem to be moving the needle at all. And that's why you have Obama yesterday attacking Trump nonstop in a brutal way. Cut 7.
Even though wages are steadily growing and inflation is finally slowing, the price of everything, from health care to housing to groceries, it's still too high. And that takes a real bite out of paychecks. It hurts. So the question is, who's really going to do something about it? That's what you should be asking yourself.
Mr. President, they are asking them that, and they liked it better when the other guy was president. And now you're actually saying that you deserve credit because you handed him a great economy? Are you going to blame him for the pandemic? And now in the beginning, they said in 2020, I don't like the way Trump handled the pandemic. Then we see how Joe Biden handled it with his mandates and the deaths that still happen, his promises on the vaccine and the derision if you didn't get it. And now they don't even want to talk about his handling of the pandemic. You know something else they don't talk about? Felon. Because they know that that's a joke. Lawfare is bad for the Democrats. It did not work out. You didn't bankrupt him. You didn't put him in jail. And the case was crap. And Barack Obama knows not to bring that up. But taking credit for the economy is something else. But he likes to personally attack Trump. Personally, he can't figure him out, if he asks me. He has no idea why he's popular. Cut 10.
Donald Trump is a 78-year-old billionaire who has not stopped whining about his problems since he rode down his golden escalator 9 years ago. You've got the tweets in all caps, the ranting and the raving about crazy conspiracy theories. You got the 2-hour speeches, word salad, just, you know, it's like Fidel Castro, just on and on.
Okay, that's what it would be like if Barack Obama ran against Trump. That's fine. You could do that. But don't go make things up like she just made up that people like to leave early and they get bored. They don't. Look at the size of that crowd in Butler. No one's talking about crowd size because you're not overestimating. He gets huge crowds. No one's ever seen anything like it. They saw it early with Obama. By the time they were done, he couldn't fill up an arena. He was one time filling up the gates in Berlin. But this is what was most important. He can't believe that black men are going for Trump. And he thinks it's because she, Harris, is a woman. And this is a little about what he was saying yesterday. Quote, "Women in our lives have been getting our backs this entire time. When we get in trouble and the system isn't working for us," he's addressing black men when he says this, "they're the ones out there marching and protesting. And now you're thinking about sitting out or supporting somebody who has a history of denigrating you because you think that's a sign of strength because that's what being a man is, putting women down? That's not acceptable." A lot of assumptions there. Because you're black, you got to vote for a woman that's partially black. Here's the thing. I think that this has nothing to do with her being a woman. Just like Joe Biden wouldn't get votes because he's white. She is doing better than the white guy. And black men were going for Trump more when Biden was running than when Kamala Harris is running. And please don't just put people in a basket. If people just say these Irish and Italians always vote one way, or these white guys from the suburbs only vote one way, or these guys that work in the city only vote one way, what are you talking about? It's just such an insult. So now he's starting to berate people and make them feel bad about their race if they don't vote for Harris. It's not that she's a woman. It's that she's not an impressive woman. That she doesn't know the issues. Invisible as a vice president. Bad job as a DA. Wants men playing in girls' sports. And has no idea about the economy.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You got to stay physical. I want you to beat each other up in practice. I'm telling you, it's a good thing.
Here's a common denominator about a state championship team. It's never the coach's team. It's always the leader's team, or the seniors in this case. It's always your leader who's going to take over and be accountable for everything that happened. And once these boys get that, I think we're well on our way.
We got a running team. Guys are running the ball, and they're not going to stepbrother you. They don't feel sorry for you. They don't care about you. You got to work outside. I may not beat every block, but God dog it, I'm going to set the edge.
Mansfield, this week, man, it's our first home game. Here's the thing. We ain't taking nobody for granted. The goal is right now, if anybody is in our way, we want to whip the piss out of them. That's what we want to do. I don't care if your grandma run through there in a shoulder pad. She's going to get knocked out, too.
Well, that is Coach Carter, one of the coaches coaching with Danny Duren, head football coach and chancellor of the Evangelical Christian Academy in Shreveport, Louisiana. This is going to be a series on Fox Nation. It is a must-see series. You'll love it, sports fan or not. God, Family, Football. It's right now on FoxNation.com. If you don't order it, get the app. Well, you'll have all the stuff on the app. Plus, catch new episodes every Friday. And today is Friday, of course. Joining us now to talk more about the series, which is very focused on him, and he puts the focus on kids and God, is coach and pastor Danny Duren. Danny, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
All right, Danny, so give some backstory. What had you, a pastor, rejoin the Christian Academy?
Well, you know, I've actually been in ministry, that is preaching the gospel, since I was 17 years old. So during my time as a college player, as a pro player, and then as a coach all these years, I've always done both. And I've always felt like football was a great gathering place for young men to be able to give them the message of Christ. So we have used that in a powerful way through the years.
So, I mean, you're an inventor, you're an educator, an entrepreneur, a coach, and a pastor, obviously a great communicator. But what is it about this school that first attracted you, where you thought you could really help? Describe this community.
Well, my mom started the school in 1980. And I'd been a college football coach, and I came home. I thought I was done coaching.
Where were you coaching prior?
I was at Evangel University in Springfield, Missouri. And so I came home. Mom had started this little school, and she said, I want you to give these boys a football experience. So I thought, how hard can it be? Well, that first year, I prayed more for protection of their lives than I did for victories, I can tell you. But we started the program in 1989, and then it became very successful. We won 14 state championships under six different head coaches that I appointed. And I stayed involved in the program, but never went back as a head coach until 5 years ago, when we hadn't won a game halfway through the season. And I realized it was a startup. We had 28 players, 68 upperclassmen had graduated. And so it was time for the old man to come back and start it again. So that's what I did.
First off, how do you explain your initial success? You're not allowed to recruit, right?
Right.
So how did you do it?
Well, success absolutely draws people. And, you know, people ask us, what about all those great quarterbacks you had? Here's the interesting thing. Seven of those quarterbacks were preacher's kids. That is, they were my sons and the sons of pastors on my staff. Now, what's amazing is two of those guys were the USA Player of the Year. And then another one of them, which was one of my sons, was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Louisiana. So we got them several places. One of the places is we gave birth to them. And so that's okay. That's kind of a thumbnail of the years of success that we had.
So the pandemic really hurt your program. When they came back, you guys weren't the same team. So you come back. And that's where this picks up, correct? This story?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And what type
I'm
of theme are we
going to see? I'm 72 years old.
Yep.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
What kind of theme are we going to see here?
Well, you're going to see some football, but it's not all about football. And I would say to the ladies in the audience, you're going to love this show. I would say to the children in the audience, you're going to love this show. My six-year-old grandson binged on this show two or three times in the first month. It's something that the whole family will enjoy. And it's all about their lives, and you get involved in their lives. We are an anomaly because we are an other side of the track private school. We make it happen for kids, not just football players, but for students from K-5 all the way up to have an opportunity to go to this wonderful school where we can share the love of Christ with them.
So you always talk, you talk a lot about religion, right?
Well, about Jesus. When we talk about religion, I think we tend to talk about whether you're a Baptist or a Catholic. But the fact is here, we have kids from everywhere, every kind of denominational background. And many, many of our kids are unchurched. They don't have to be Christians to come to our school. We just want kids that are willing to come and obey the rules and allow us to have their ear and their hearts to be able to share the message of Christ with them.
Understood. So that plays a role in all this. When you say other side of the tracks, is there tuition?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. But our tuition is lower than anyone in private schools in this area and in most areas of the country. And we work very, very hard with the state to take advantage of their scholarship programs so that children can have a private education that could never have one before.
A lot of times your guys go on to play college football. What percentage?
Well, you know, I don't know, but we've had over 125 kids play at D1 schools. And we actually, Brian, and this blows my mind, we have 7 active players in the NFL right now.
Who are they?
Well, we've got Jerry Tillery, Trent Taylor, Ardarius Washington.
Right.
We've got Elijah Chapman, who is a rookie with the New York Giants, Miles Cole, who's with the Jacksonville team. And then help me.
Oh, you did it. No, you did it.
Oh, did we do it?
Yeah, okay. You did it. But I'm just saying that it's so impressive.
Jared Bernard.
So here's with an example. But you're not telling them, you listen to me, I'll get you the NFL. You're just saying, I'll be able to maximize your talent, but you have to have a balanced life.
Yeah.
Especially in a game like yours. The best players a lot of times get these devastating injuries. If you don't have values and ethics, you're lost and you wasted your time.
So well said. So well said. Yes. And, you know, these kids buy in. They love what we do here. We have a 7 o'clock every morning doctrinal Bible study. That's just, you know, basic study of the Bible that would relate to anyone who wanted to know what the Bible has to say about life. And they are there 5 days a week. We have a worship time. And then I pray over them every morning. I pray a father's blessing. Some of these kids don't have dads. Some of them have absentee dads, or they don't have a good experience with their fathers. And so it's the only time in their life they've ever heard a dad pray over their lives.
So the other thing, Denny, is you are tough with them. Judging by some of the clips I've seen, it doesn't mean you're easy, correct?
No. Love is discipline and correction. So we do correct them. And also we allow them to understand that all of our correction is not so that they can win football games for the coach. But all of our correction is so that they can get to the next level of their performance and their success.
Here you are doing what you do best, coaching. Here's a clip from the series God, Family, Football. 43.
Well, me, honestly, I'm a winner. You know, I don't ever want to lose.
Finish!
I don't want to be a player who only can play good in the first half, so don't take a lot. Go work out, run the hill. You got to earn it here.
Whenever I'm running the hill and I'm getting tired, think about all of the struggling my mother goes through, working overnight, 2 jobs, and I push through and get the job done.
This is the secret to Friday night. You get tired Friday night, we get beat.
That's tough, but the family story is key, right? Football is football, but when you give the backstory on the people, that's kind of like, Denny, like what the reason why I loved Hard Knocks. It's like, I like to get to know the people and the decision makers behind, and there's so much more than just the people on the field and the coaches. You're not doing this for money, correct? You're not doing this to get rich. And your other coaches aren't doing it to get rich.
Right. No, not at all. In fact, they don't make as much here and will never make as much here as they could make across town or down the street at another high school.
So how do we get to the point where you don't have to keep coming back, where this program can live and survive without you?
Well, you know, they can survive without me, but I don't want them to.
you like coaching again.
I want them to survive, and I want them to be successful. And they would be successful without me. But this is my calling, Brian. God has called me to this, and I know it with all of my heart. I'm 72 years old. I wake up every morning with my hair on fire. I can't wait to get here. It's my happy place. At my stage of life, I can live anywhere in the world I want. Mm-hmm. But this is my happy corner of the world. And it's because of the mission of being able to reach one child at a time and hopefully to change their destiny through the wonderful message that Christ loves them.
So the Evangel Christian Academy in Shreveport, Louisiana is the place. Head coach Denny Doran is the center of it. And we talk about God Family Football, a series only seen on Fox Nation. A new episode drops every Friday. Coach, I can't wait to see it.
Hey, thanks. Did you ever play football, Brian?
I played soccer. I had to make a decision.
You kind of have an eye of a tiger. You look like a competitor, you know.
Well, I do have eligibility left. Maybe I should come back, Coach. You know, if I had a football guy in my life, it's just my whole town played soccer. So I can't explain it.
No, that's the real football, right? The real football.
Well, the first football. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll come back. I want to talk about, I didn't give you the Wall Street Journal poll or the Emerson poll. I'll share it with you. Also, I'll give you some more of Obama and some of what President Trump brought up yesterday, what I think matters to Michigan a lot. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You have these children that are seemingly well-adjusted, successful, and I think, most importantly, they appear to like you.
Yeah.
Okay? I grew up in the city, and there's a lot of people who had, like, very wealthy parents, and, like, the kids kind of resent them. Yeah. And I was, like, waiting for them to, like, die, and they end up in, like, rehabs.
Doing
and
drugs, God knows what, yeah.
How do you raise them in the public eye where they, you know, still become ambitious and successful?
So I do have good kids and 5 really wonderful children and different, very different. Yeah, they are so different. But, you know, one thing that was in common that I did, I always used to say when I was with them or when they were leaving a room, I would drive them crazy. No drugs. Hmm. No alcohol, no cigarettes. I would say that.
Did you say that to Don Jr.?
Don's a little wild.
And then he went on to say that one time Don had. Oh, you have it? So that was Andrew Schultz, and that's the podcast that President went on. And he was supposed to be, I guess, 20 minutes. Ended up being at least 45 minutes. 2 comedians, and Andrew Schultz is probably the hottest comedian in the country, sells out the Garden. And they just had, they actually did their research. They're not just winging it. And they wanted to have a conversation. And that's what I always said. I have no problem with Kamala Harris doing lighthearted things and talking about other things. But you got to be able to do real things, too. And this was one of those things half in, half out. But it talked more about him personally. Now, here he talks about Don Jr. Listen to this.
He said to me, he goes, once he asked if he could have a couple of his friends over for New Year's. Was it New Year? No, it was July 4th.
Right.
On top of Trump Tower.
Right.
And five you friends. Said yes. He's like, I want 5 friends. You're like, okay, I'm out of town. Go for it. He brings 200 people over to Trump Tower. Okay?
That's right.
Okay. He says that you weren't supposed to be there. You end up showing up. You hear some noise upstairs. You come up. You go, what the f*** is everybody doing here? Get the hell out of my house. He said he cleaned for the next 36 hours. And he said, to this day, you have never brought up that it even happened. And he said, I'm starting to believe it might not have happened.
Yeah. So said,
can you give him closure?
No, it happened. No, I can never give closure. you can never forget.
So, you know, Don was a little crazy, a little wild, like every kid. It's a lot of kids. But what's your takeaway on that, Allison?
No, I said I think it was so telling. And what, I don't know, self, just as a parent, to not bring something up again ever to him. Like, to never bring up that he messed up so badly. You just, like, let sit with them. Like, that's impressive. I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
The one thing he always does is when they talk about his kids, he always gives credit to the mothers. And he was really, Ivana is his first wife. Obviously, Barron's doing great, it seems, by all accounts. And then you have Tiffany, who maybe during her formative years, she lived with her mom. And now she's very much a part of the family. And I remember Ivanka reaching out during the president, early in the presidency, and going, we got to bring her into this. And now he announced the other day, she's great. He loves her husband. No, Trump loves the husband or the new son-in-law, and she's having a baby. So the one thing that Kamala Harris said yesterday, one of the questions at the town hall was, can you say anything nice about Trump? You say, well, he's a great family man. He seems to be a great family man. So that was the one thing. You really have a tough time doing it. And here's what I was telling you. Why is there not an ad out of his granddaughter saying, my dad, my grandfather likes to take me out golfing and he really likes to put pressure on me and you know, go at me and we go back and forth. And I always try to tell him that I'm a Trump too. And you have all these personal stories like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, after she's getting her looks and getting insulted and having a hard time. He said they can't touch you, and he consoled her. That stood out more than the policy talks and everything. That personal side, I think, would help a lot of people vote for him.
No, I agree. And that's what Governor Sununu said a few weeks back on this show, saying he's so great and sort of humble when the cameras are off. And if he showed that side a little bit more, did one of those personal interactions, like when he visited the kid at the hospital every day.
Right.
Or I agree with you. Put that ad together and then put it on The View. We're all like the women who he's supposed to win over are, you know, in theory watching to show the human side of him.
Yeah. Pat, you're in Chicago. Hey, Pat.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I just want to I think the importance of local government and how we need to really shine a light on that, because the roll-up effect is, like, for example, in Chicago, we have a $1 billion deficit, and we're trying to take a high interest rate loan to the teachers' union. And as a sanctuary city, you know, we're spending all this money. It's just
crazy.
It's amazing. The groundswell that's going on, people are really – really talking about, you know, punching the Republican ticket. I mean, it's so prevalent.
You really seeing
well.
It, Pat, from people that normally, I mean, do you talk to people outside your circle?
Absolutely. You know, it's just we're seeing it in the local unions. You're seeing it, you know, just people are fed up. You know, I think, you know, it's the everyday American that is just saying, like, hey, I don't really like what's going on in my local government. I don't like what's going on in my national government. I think it's important that that discussion takes place, and I think that we're going to see that.
And, Pat, here's the other thing. You know, when Trump was president, he saw the South Side of Chicago. He called up. He said, I'll send the National Guard. I'll help you out. The gang warfare that's going on, the killing that's happening, no one's paying attention to it. And they said, no, don't even bother. Don't even call me. Don't want to deal with it. Unless it becomes a national program. When the George Floyd riots happened, he said, I'm going to use National Guard. They said, no, we don't want you to do that. You're going to make things worse. So you're right. Local government is underappreciated, and I think people got to act. The minute Republicans start winning some of these races, then Democrats will realize they got to change. I always said, if you want to get Democrats to enforce the border, let the Hispanic vote start going to Republicans, because they think every person that crosses the border is a future – thanks so much for the call – is a future Democratic voter. When they realize they're not – that they're just hardworking people that want to pursue the American dream and they want to do it right. Other people breaking the law ticks them off more than anybody else, because I know people that try to get citizenship. It costs money. You got to study for tests. It's a lot of waiting, a lot of visits. Sometimes you got to take off work to do it. You got to get witnesses. You got to get lawyers. It's a pain in the neck, and it's very costly. And when someone just breaks the system, it can stay here. And then in the case in Oklahoma, they end up being terrorists. Are you kidding?
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade show coming your way. Ben Shapiro will be here at the bottom of the hour. Curtis Sliwa inside with the falling. The government of Mayor Adams is just disintegrating before our eyes, and they're trying to tell us crime is going down. You got to be kidding me. His son got in a fight along with former Governor Patterson just walking the streets over the weekend. Yeah, I'm sure. Let's just find out if he believes crime is going down. Ben Domenech is standing by, Fox News contributor, editor at large for the Spectator World and host of the Ben Domenech podcast. We're going to go inside the polls and tell you where we're at right now, both sides. But before we do that, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I don't see how CBS gets away with not releasing the transcript. I mean, as a journalist, I'm happy to, you know, when you do a full interview, you're happy to release the full transcript. You should be happy to release it. That's a big part of journalistic ethics.
You know why? Because it kills me to have to edit an interview down. You know, you talk for a half hour, you can only use 4 minutes, 60 minutes, probably talk to her for hours. And what they ended up editing and the final product, putting new answers to their questions, obviously is unacceptable. And their promos department wasn't getting the memo CBS seems to be in free fall when it comes to ethics. First, their condemnation of their own anchor for asking probing questions of an anti-Israeli author. And then that other story I just told you about, 60 Minutes. No wonder Trump turned him down.
Number two.
I will put my record up against anyone in terms of the work I have always done and will always do to ensure we have a secure border.
Really? Immigration policy front and center for Americans this election season, as another special status migrant is found to be a terrorist over in Oklahoma. Migrant gangs plague many of our cities, 8 overall. Groups once again are beginning to surge the Texas border. Hey, Ms. Harris, Vice President, that is your record.
Number one.
And the reason some people think, well, I don't know, I remember that economy when he first came in being pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good because it was my economy.
They don't say they don't remember when coming in pretty good. They remember what leaving was pretty good. And they know what the pandemic role was. Battle for the battlegrounds. The Trump campaign is feeling better day by day about their chances. In all 7 battleground states, there's a bit of panic on the left admitting the sugar high is over. And they call in their most popular figure, Barack Obama, to save the day. Can he be the closer? Ben Domenech knows all about it. In fact, his father-in-law ran against Barack Obama in 2008, John McCain. Ben, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian. It's been quite a week for the Kamala Harris campaign. And, you know, really, this media tour, it should have been something that was really easy, a layup for her, you know, going and sitting down with all of these different friendly interviewers. Really, the only tough interview that she had was the 60 Minutes one. And yet she comes out at the end of it, and it just feels like all she did was gain more baggage and disappoint more people. It's just astonishing to see someone have a run of media interactions that has created so many problems for her in the absence of some kind of overarching scandal or issue. You know, you don't really see politicians have this kind of difficulty, and yet it seems like she was woefully unprepared for very obvious questions, particularly on issues like immigration and the border.
No, there's no question. There's no depth. I mean, do you have to? She says, I used to prosecute transnational gangs. No, your track record is what's going on right now at the border. It's not something you may or may not have done as a DA in California. And I think that she's trying to get that, and it's not working. But when we look at the polls right now, I'm sure you've seen them. But Emerson and the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal poll is not great. It's good. But Arizona, for the first one I've seen in a long time, has her up too. Georgia has her up too. Michigan has her up too. North Carolina, dead heat. Nevada, Trump up too. Pennsylvania, Trump up 1. And Wisconsin, a tie. Emerson, Arizona, Trump's up 2. Georgia, Trump is up 1. Michigan, tie. Nevada, Harris 1. North Carolina has 49-48 Trump. Pennsylvania, 49-48 Trump. Wisconsin, tie. So at the very least, this is not where they were in August. That sugar high, we got a new candidate, Trump's toast. Those days are done. So where do you think this is, Ben?
Well, I think that this is, you know, again, a very close race. But I think that if you wanted to pick which side you'd rather be on at this moment, it's definitely the Trump campaign. And that's for a number of reasons. One is, it really does look like she maxed out her gender gap during this summer with the sugar high. And she's actually been bleeding support among men since then, including, by the way, college-educated men. People like to focus on the working class and that kind of thing. But she still needs to win a sizable portion of those college-educated men in order to prevail across the blue wall states. The other thing is that she clearly is having struggles with rural voters in ways that she had hoped perhaps Tim Walz was going to help her with. He hasn't helped her at all. He hasn't helped her win any of those people back. And instead, I think he's proven himself to be a liability in terms of how far left he is, you know, including, you know, this latest incident with him doing an interview with Michael Strahan where he has to, you know, defend getting rid of the Electoral College. And the other thing is that I think that Kamala, you know, is really finding that she can't just win this based on vibes and the support of the media. She needed to create some more distinctions, I think, between herself and Joe Biden. How are you different other than just being a different person? You know, and that kind of a failure to answer that question when it came to, you know, the questioners on The View and Stephen Colbert, et cetera. I feel like that was an opportunity for her to have some distinction from Joe that she just wasn't capable of understanding.
But here's the thing, Ben, she did answer it. She did answer it by saying essentially nothing, which means there's no change, and that she's running as the change candidate, which was a joke anyway.
So here's, you know, there was that interaction, which I'm sure if you haven't played it for your listeners, I hope you will, with Secretary Mayorkas yesterday and our own Jackie Heinrich. And I think that you look at Mayorkas and you see someone who's just a terrible person at his job. He's just been a complete failure in that cabinet role to do the kind of things that one would expect of a Homeland Security secretary. That's a layup for Kamala Harris. It's to say to an interviewer who asks her, you know, I love Joe. It's been great.
Hey, do you
want to
hear this,
Joe?
Ben? Ben, let's hear it. Cut 25.
How was this man brought into the U.S.?
I'd be very pleased to answer your question in a different setting, but we're here to talk about emergencies.
How do you not have those answers prepared?
That's not what I said. What I said is I'd be pleased to discuss this issue at a different time.
The outstanding question is whether this man was radicalized before the U.S. government brought him here or afterward. And people should be concerned about that.
Jackie, your persistence in questioning can be matched by my persistence in answers.
What a clown. This is a serious issue. He's not talking about painting Homeland Security's offices. This is a terror attack.
Exactly. So, Brian, here's an example, though, of something Kamala didn't do but that she could have done. She could have sat down in one of these instances where she's asked about differences between her and Joe Biden and say, look, I've loved working with Joe Biden. Joe's been in Washington for a really long time, and he's a very loyal guy. He hasn't gotten rid of any cabinet secretaries, but you know, since he started day one. I'm someone who believes that sometimes you need new blood. You need to have people who are responsive and who you can have confidence in to get your job done. And so I look at something like what's happened on the southern border. I look at something like what's happened with the Homeland Security Department. And I think that we need to have somebody in those roles who's held accountable and who does the job. There's a way to do that gracefully that basically separates yourself from Joe Biden without getting into a big policy dispute, but basically just, you know, cast herself as being this confident girl boss, which she claims to be, who's going to hold people accountable and get some new blood in there. And that's a way to present yourself as a candidate of change. She didn't do any of that. She basically puts herself in a position of completely being the exact same person as Joe Biden, just with a different last name and a different ethnic background. And that's not something that's going to work.
And you know what? Barack Obama is now trying to shame black men to not vote for Trump. And he's trying to say that Trump only cares about himself and grievance. All right. Good luck with that. Well, number one, he's got a lot to complain about. I don't think Trump is perfect. I'm not either. Even though some people would argue with me that I am perfect. And I got to take that into the break. I know Eric, for one, says I have yet to see a mistake that works here. Allison sees a lot of it. We'll talk about that later, if you don't mind. But obviously he's coming out, he's berating black people not to vote for Donald Trump. Really? I mean, what an insult that is, or that black men don't want to vote for a woman. What an insult that is. Why not just look at the candidate?
It's absolutely ridiculous, but it is once again an example of Barack Obama coming out. You know, and he does this just about every 2 years or so, and he expresses how much he's disappointed in all of us. And it's just a very consistent pattern with Barack Obama. Oh, wait, Barack Obama's disappointed in us again, and he's going to, you know, tug on his chin and say that we need to be better. And I just think that it's absurd. People are responding to the indications that they have on the economic challenges that we face, on the security challenges that we face, and the fact that they don't feel like any of those things are primary concerns for the Democratic Party and for Kamala Harris is the reason that they're skeptical about voting for her.
So I want you to hear this. This is the reason why she is coming down to earth in the polls. Cut 30 is the original. This is her original answer that was on the promos promoting her appearance on 60 Minutes. Cut 30.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
Totally nuts. All over the place. What are you even trying to say? Right? So they realized it too. And I wouldn't be surprised if the truth comes out that they made a call after that promo ran and said, fix that. And this is what we got on Sunday, on Monday night. Cut 31.
Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
Not a great answer, but a heck of a lot better. That's from a Definitely. Different question. Think about that,
and,
Ben.
And that kind of defensive, you know, the people who are running interference for her, you know, have prevented her from doing any kind of real sit downs with tough questions that are taken live and that go out to the American people. Instead, she's been protected by this bubble. And I think that people detect that. They can see through it. They can see that she seems inauthentic and untrustworthy. And really, that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, even for people, independent voters, you know, who may have been questioning things during that summer when they were being sold this idea that she was this generational political talent, they're seeing all the same things, all the same factors that we saw back in 2019 when she flamed out before a single vote was cast. And that's just the fact that she's a very limited politician who hasn't done a lot, hasn't accomplished a lot, and there hasn't been a lot asked of her to this point. And now she's showing, I think, and repeatedly, that she is just not up for the job at this moment.
That's what we're seeing right now. So Barack Obama's going to go for the close, and we'll see how that goes. For Tim Walz, he's trying to play the man card because men are flocking to Trump, everything from the shooting to the podcasts he chooses to do. Whatever, if people have some visions of what Kamala Harris would be, I don't think gender has anything to do with this election, because keep in mind, Trump was doing better against Biden with African-Americans than he was against Kamala Harris. So listen to Tim Walz, cut five.
The football coach knows in me, you make a playbook, you're going to run the plays.
Not bad for a football coach, not bad.
But I do know this, as a football coach, you take the time to draw up a playbook, you're going to run the plays.
I said, as a football coach, when you take the time to draw up a playbook, you're going to use it.
Look, I'm coaching football. I coach football long enough. No, you take the time to draw up a playbook, you're damn sure going to use it.
Do you feel more masculine now?
Sorry, I had not heard that supercut. That's fantastic. I mean, come on. How much more can he just say, you know, hey, I'm just gonna reference this over and over and over again and try to use it as a shield? Look, we all know that you can't just put on a flannel shirt, you can't just put on a jersey and have something in common with the people who are out there tailgating, who know that the price of their chicken wings and their beer has gone up significantly over the past 4 years, and have any kind of idea that you can cover up for that inflationary expenditures in a way that is just going to make them satisfied with football references. I think that Tim Walz is going to go down in this campaign as being a huge missed opportunity for Kamala Harris. She decided to go far left. She decided to go even less experienced than her. And I think that there can be no real confidence that he's a guy who's prepared to take on this role, to be in the White House, in the decision room, you know, making sort of critical calls on all these different matters. And I, you know, really do believe that this is a challenging moment for the Democratic Party. What lessons will they take from losing, Brian? And I think that one of the big lessons they're going to take away is it's going to be a split between the people who think that they should have stuck with Joe, as unpopular as he was, as much as he was losing, you know, touch with a lot of things. They would be doing better in Pennsylvania probably today. And it's one of the reasons that John Fetterman was one of the last voices in the room saying, we got to stick with Joe.
Right. And I just, you know what I hope, though, I hope, Ben, that we stop with the girls and the men in women's sports, that we stop with the intolerance, the pronouns, that we stop with denying that we got this great energy base, that mm-hmm. we go back to battling for issues that have to do with the budget and have to do with international relations, but don't get back to the fundamentals of our society and where we're heading. That's what I hope, because Trump bucked the Republicans too, because they were never going to run a candidate like this. Yep. So it made people reevaluate everything. So it's not over. I do think it's going to be decided in the next 2 or 3 weeks, but yep. I'd rather be Trump than Harris.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's going to be borne out on election night, Brian. And I know this is, you know, we have the advantage of having a number of key Senate races in these critical electoral college states. And those Democrat senators are sounding the alarm. They are very worried about what they're seeing. They're very worried that Kamala is not going to perform well enough for them to be able to succeed. And in that situation, obviously, you could end up with Republicans having a much more significant majority. It's the fact that they're going to get one, I think is almost certain already, given that Don Tester is going to lose and they're going to win West Virginia. But it could be more significant than that, depending on how things go on election night.
It's going to be exciting. Ben, I always love your analysis, and you can catch it on the podcast. And he's a Fox News contributor. Ben Domenech, thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
All right. Back with the phone calls. Bottom of the hour, Ben Shapiro, deep thinker, always speaks his mind. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we're back. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro. Then I'm going to go inside New York politics and crime, Curtis Sliwa. But I just think when we talk about what's happening, I think we should keep our eye on the number of rallies now. Trump always said, I'm not going to leave anything in the locker room. I'm going to finish up strong. Evidently, he tripled the number of appearances that Kamala Harris had. Remember, 58 years old. She's supposed to have all the energy, all the good vibes. Also, multiple events. Reports, I think it was in Punch Bowl, that she has so many meetings and strategy sessions, but they want her out with the people more talking. They put her in a town hall. She's going to do a town hall on CNN. Sooner or later, a Jake Tapper, Anderson Cooper, whoever, Dana Bash, they're going to ask her a real question, and she has no answer. I mean, one of the questions, they'll try to help her out with a tough question, especially if they tell her she's going to have to tell it ahead of time. I mean, can David Plouffe whisper to her to get some real answers? I mean, I hope not. I think the answer should be real, but I just can't believe they can't talk their way out of some of these issues. Either that or she's uncoachable and refusing to read stuff, which I have heard when she was vice president.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Donald Trump is a 78-year-old billionaire who has not stopped whining about his problems since he rode down his golden escalator 9 years ago. You've got the tweets in all caps, the ranting and the raving about crazy conspiracy theories. Got the 2-hour speeches, word salad, just, you know, it's like Fidel Castro, just on and on.
So that was President Obama directly going at Donald Trump personally. And think about Joe Biden, too. Yesterday, get a life, he tells Donald Trump, get a life and start helping people, because he doesn't like what Donald Trump's been saying about the coverage. What they've done, what FEMA's done in North Carolina, and Barack Obama trying to get personal yesterday, and also went on to say talking to African-American men looking in their 20s, how dare you not vote for a woman, a black woman? I find it interesting. It's certainly calculated. He's not one to fly off the handle and not prethink these things. Ben Shapiro joins us now, Daily Wire co-founder, host of The Ben Shapiro Show, who just a couple of days ago, I think, interviewed President Trump. Ben, your reaction to Barack Obama's reentry into the field?
Well, I mean, it's a desperation move. When you're calling out Barack Obama at the end of a campaign, for some reason, Democrats have had this bizarre notion that Obama is capable of shifting all the allegiance that people have for him to other candidates. It has never worked. He tried it with Hillary Clinton. He tried it with Biden. He's tried it with Kamala Harris. It's never been transferable. Whatever people like about Barack Obama, it doesn't move over to other candidates, which is why he experienced massive Democratic Party losses across the country while he was president. He lost a bunch of state legislatures, a bunch of governor's houses. He lost the Senate. He lost the House. Right? All of that happened while he was president. But dragging him out and then putting him up there, I actually don't think it helps her very much. He's uniquely charismatic in a way that she is not. It makes people in the Democratic Party long for him, not long for her. And again, this sort of weird approach that he has, where he's ripping on Trump and then proclaiming that you should vote for Kamala Harris basically because she's a black woman. That is not a pitch. That is not a pitch for why she should actually be president. And by the way, everyone already knows what they think about Donald Trump. How many people out there are undecided about what they think about Donald Trump after 10 years? Are you kidding me?
Right. And then he's trying to say now, I'm not going to play and take time away from you. But he said, yeah, the reason why you liked the economy when Trump was president, because that was my economy. Really? So what are you're taking credit for the 4 years after Donald Trump? After you left office?
Right. Exactly. So that last point is actually the right one, Brian, is this logic is so incoherent. So just to get this straight, he is saying basically that if you're the president, then the subsequent presidents economic record is yours. Okay, so then how exactly does Joe Biden and Kamala, how do they brag about their economy? If their economy is so wonderful, shouldn't Donald Trump be able to just say, well, that's actually my economy? That's what Barack Obama just said about Donald Trump's economy. None of it makes any sense, but it's not calculated to make any sense. It's a desperation move, and you're seeing tons of desperation moves. It reeks from the Kamala Harris campaign at this point, not just because she's doing all of these strange podcasts, like Call Her Daddy podcast or the bizarre appearance on The View. You know, these are desperation moves by a campaign that is clearly floundering right now. Yesterday, Michelle Andrew, who's a co-chair of her campaign, said that they've released an 82-page economic plan, policy plan. I just have a point to make on that one. Okay, any campaign that is relegated to releasing giant binders filled with policy loses. Hey, you remember Mitt Romney in 2012? There's a lot of talk about his giant tax plan, like this huge binder filled with tax plan. He lost. Elizabeth Warren in 2020. If you have to say to the American people, here's what my boys in the back room put together as a policy, the American people don't want to hear it. They don't think you're going to effectuate it. The thing that is so off-putting about Kamala Harris is that either you already know her worldview, which is radical left, or you have no idea what her worldview is, and she's not clarifying it for you because she doesn't want you to know her worldview, and she's just an empty vessel. Either way, that's a bad answer.
So, Ben, it's just so interesting. In the New York Times today, they acknowledge what you just said, but they praise her for it, for avoiding questions. This week, Harris put her own stamp on the art of the dodge. Her media swing showed how she often responds to uncomfortable questions by acknowledging them, yet not fully answering them. She can nimbly field a query and quickly lace her reply with a tripwire for her opponent, like a trained prosecutor. Harris is a loyally argumentative and fundamentally defensive. So she's praising her for not answering anything and saying her answers set up Trump. I can't believe this is the verbal gymnastics they're going through.
Again, these are the marks of a losing campaign. If you recall 2004 or 2000, Al Gore and John Kerry, the line whenever a Democrat loses, they were too sophisticated for the crowd. Right. What they're saying in that piece is that she's just too sophisticated. Right. She's relegated to defensive lawyerly arguments because she's just too smart. And you normies, you don't understand how smart she is. OK, the reason that she's not connecting is not because she's too smart for the crowd. It's because she's not saying anything, and she's deliberately not saying anything, and she can't answer even simple questions. The worst thing she did this week, she goes on The View, which is the friendliest show it is possible. I mean, they basically took up residence in her colon, and they were doing whatever they could to ask her simple questions. And she was asked by Sonny Hostin, what makes you different from Joe Biden? And she basically is like, nothing. Okay, that's like the number one question people want answered. And your answer is that you would change nothing from the Biden? Nothing? Like, that's your answer? It's a ready-made ad for Donald Trump. And the Trump campaign promptly jumped on it, right, and started pumping it out, as they should.
Because she was starting to make gains, and she's the agent of change. How could you be a change candidate still in power? It's beyond me. And the other thing is, there's passive aggressiveness going on with Joe Biden, praising Governor DeSantis, who won't take her call. We know that she said she was with me every step of the way in every decision. He went out of his way to do it, calling a press conference, walking into the press room at the same time that she has an event. So the other thing that I think you're passionate about, I imagine, is the appearance of a certain Tahisi Coates, who is an anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, in my view, author, race relations, seems to condemn the country at every turn, says his parents grew up in the Jim Crow South, understood that could create some bitterness, and justifiably so, but he writes about it. And Tony DeCoppel decides to challenge him on this at CBS, his anti-Israel point of view. Listen, cut 35.
It's what I struggled with throughout this book. What is it that so particularly offends you about the existence of a Jewish state that is a Jewish safe place and not any of the other states out there?
There's nothing that offends me about a Jewish state. I am offended by the idea of states built on ethnocracy, no matter where they are.
And he went on to say that Gaza is an open air prison, that people are walking around, they think they're going to get shot, they don't get cancer treatments, they're treated horribly by the Israelis. And when he started engaging on this, he got rebuked by his own company. He was forced to, I guess, apologize. They have grief counselors coming in to speak to the staff. But yet Sherry Redstone, the former owner of the company, defends him, and other people do, too. I think I know where you stand. But can you understand I cannot get my head around the uproar.
OK, so here's the thing. Ta-Nehisi Coates, he's not just wrong. He's actually quite evil. And he's been evil since 2014, 2015, when he became prominent. And the entire left decided to shower him with champagne and diamonds for it. He was writing pieces in 2014, 2015, boiling down all of America into the conflict between black and white, suggesting that white is an oppressor class, black is an oppressed class. And he says in his very famous book, Between the World and Me, that he literally felt nothing as police and firefighters burned to death on 9/11 because they were just representatives of the white overclass. He literally says this kind of stuff in 2014, 2015. He takes that very simplistic view, which is wrong in America. It's wrong across the board. And then he applies it to a very complex conflict like Israel and the Palestinians after visiting there for 2 weeks. And then he comes back and he actually did an interview with Trevor Noah, who's similarly execrable, in which he actually said that if he were a Gazan, he's not sure he could have stopped himself from crossing the border into Israel and engaging in rape and slaughter. He said that. Okay, so the CBS interview, Tony DelCapel asks him a very simple, he says, listen, your book reads like it belongs in an extremist backpack. And this creates enormous, enormous blowback. CBS apparently has a race policy team that actually clears questions for people like Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's sort of a racial icon who must never be touched. He must never be asked a difficult question. And so they get very angry at Tony DelCapel for saying that. And then Ta-Nehisi Coates proceeds to go on a show and basically prove DelCapel's point, which is that he is an extremist who actually justifies violence in the name of a victimizer narrative. And CBS News is melting down over this. They actually also put out a notice to all of their reporters that they should stop saying that Jerusalem is in Israel. Now, the United States government recognizes that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. And both parties have acknowledged this, by the way. And yet CBS News is saying differently. So what that really speaks to is the disgusting worldview that not only Coates represents, but that has been imbibed into the bones of our legacy media institutions. Because the fact that they are so defensive of Coates, the fact that if you ask him anything remotely like a difficult question about his true brash worldview and book, that now results in the entire meltdown of CBS News. It's just indicative of how perverse and truly corrupt our press have become. You know, when I had President Trump on earlier this week, he said, I'm no longer calling them the fake news. I'm calling them the corrupt news. That seems about right to me.
Well, I mean, CBS is going out of their way, too. This whole thing with 60 Minutes, you know, asked some direct questions. People were praising the anchor for doing it. But then we find out that they choked up on and gave a different answer to make her seem more competent, not very, but more competent than her original answer. However, the problem is no one called the promos department because they put out the promo that shows how she talked in a circle and then they fix it for the actual broadcast. Now, we all have to sometimes edit. Not Ben, you run your own show, but we have to edit. Sometimes you go out and I'll talk to Ben Shapiro for 25 minutes. It's a 4-minute piece. So I got to edit. Just, I got to pick and choose. Maybe I have a whole answer. That's not what this is. This is a different answer to the same question.
And one of the things that was kind of amazing, if you actually watched 60 Minutes, is that in the middle of her answers, they'd actually cut to the anchor explaining her answer over her answer. So they would lower the volume on her answer, and then they would attempt to give a synopsis of what they think she was saying over her just answering the question. She's a presidential candidate. You need to hear her talk. It seems to me very simple what they could do here. They could just release the entire interview. And it's very simple. You don't have to release the whole thing on 60 Minutes. We have this thing called online, and there are no time limits in the online space. I mean, I live there. Right. You can do whatever you want over there. They can release 60 Minutes, the entire transcript of the interview. They can release the entire tape of the interview. They're not doing any of that because obviously they want her to win because CBS News is just an addendum to the Democratic Party.
And you know, it was the smartest move ever that Trump didn't do it. They would have spent the whole time on January 6th, the whole time on 2020. Yes. And this would not even have made news. It would have been all about what Trump said, nothing about what she said. Instead, they took their shots and said he was going to do it and didn't. He's already done it multiple times. And the whole thing with Leslie Stowe is 100% right. She had no idea they spied on his campaign. No idea the laptop was real. The one with the 51 intel agents were against it. She was just oblivious. So until he gets an apology, he wouldn't do it. Just back to the original. We have the CBS person in charge of news gathering explaining where Tony went wrong. Who, by the way, I never met him. Cut 37.
Many of you have reached out to express concerns over recent reporting. Specifically about the CBS Mornings Coates interview from last week, as well as comments made coming out of some of our correspondents' reporting. I want to thank every single one who reached out for your honesty, your transparency, and your commitment. So I want to address three things. Number one, after a review of our coverage, including the interview, it's clear there are times we have not met our editorial standards.
And you got it. Final thought on this?
Listen, CBS News has demonstrated precisely what it is. There's a reason why, as President Trump says, they're failing in the ratings. And he is correct not to subject himself to that kind of stuff. The only good news is that they're becoming so patently obvious in their bias that I think more and more Americans are tuning out and recognizing precisely what they are, which in the end will be good for America. I'd rather they be obvious about their horrible bias and continue to pretend they're objective.
Ben Shapiro, Daily Wire co-founder, host of The Ben Shapiro Show, number one New York Times bestseller. Thanks, Ben. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. We come back. Curtis Sliwa, inside what's happening in New York and what just happened to his son. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Curtis Sliwa joins us right now, fresh off his show on WABC, filling in for Sid. You see him all around the channel. Founder of the Guardian Angels. Curtis, welcome back.
I wish it was a welcoming moment, but thanks for throwing me this lifeline about my city that I love and I know you love. That right now, nobody is safe in New York City. Nobody is safe.
So tell us what happened with your stepson and Governor Patterson. With your son and Governor Patterson, excuse me.
Right. My oldest son, Anthony Chester Sliwa, his stepfather is David Patterson, who married my previous wife, Mary. They have a great family relationship, Governor Patterson, a great stepfather. I appreciate it. But they were out going to a McDonald's, which is their normal routine, and they were confronted by three teenage thugs in the Upper East Side. This is not a high-crime area. Because of a situation that Anthony had gotten into an hour before, where he had seen three teenagers scale a fire escape, and they were preparing to go into an apartment. You know, they were casing the apartment. He's a guardian angel. He's graduated the program. He knows, see something, say something. So he yells up at them, hey, get down from there. If you don't get down, I'm going to call the police. So they get down, they exchange some words with him, and they walk away. And little did he realize that they were hanging outside in the McDonald's that he and Governor David Patterson loved to frequent. An hour later, they go for their burger and fries. The three teenagers confront them. Governor David Patterson says, hey, you could have fallen from there. He did you a favor. And two adults who are hanging out there with other adults. This is a 40-year-old man who works for the New York City Housing Authority and a 34-year-old woman who works for the New York City Housing Authority intervene. And instead of calming the teenagers down, the female punches my son Anthony in the face and the male punches Governor David Patterson. My son goes down on one knee, and the gang assault starts. There are nine people. You can see it on your own Fox News Digital. They've posted the video. It's horrific. It's horrific, Brian. They could have killed my son. I've been in many of these street situations. Thank God for Governor David Patterson. He's blind. He jumps into the fray. He starts throwing some of these guys around, which momentarily gives my son an opportunity to try to get up, and then they kick him in the head. That could have killed him. The police arrived. Arrests eventually were made. And I had to post that video because, believe it or not, the two adults go into court after they're arrested for gang assault, and they blame Governor Patterson, a blind man, and my son for starting the fight because they said, oh, he's a guardian angel. He's a black belt. And in Alvin Bragg, Manhattan, as you know, Brian, the criminals always are turned loose. The victims, even in this case, of Governor David Patterson, may not have their day of justice in court.
So the whole thing is they also had a press conference yesterday saying crime is going down in New York City by all metrics.
Look, Brian, he's delusional. He says it's a perception. Sly Stallone's daughter was chased three blocks in New York City by a crazed man on a bicycle. She had to run into a store near Times Square, get behind the counter. He tried to come and kill her, as he said.
Right.
Thank God the employees warded her off. Brian, you're not safe. No one's safe in New York City. This is Gotham City, and the streets are out of control.
Curtis, last minute, I just want to know, are you going to run for mayor now?
You're damn right, Brian. If any reason gives me reason, it's what just happened to my oldest son. They could have killed him. That could have been any New Yorker. I'm the guy who's cleaned up the streets in New York City for 46 years with the Guardian Angels, and I'll do it as mayor, Brian. And I'm willing to take on all the comers, Cuomo, Adams, whatever flavor of the day. Get into the ring of fire. Let's have a debate.
Curtis Sliwa, thanks so much. You'll be great. Hope your son gets better. Here he is. And watch it on FoxNews.com. It's just horrific. Curtis, thanks so much.
Thank you for your support, Brian. You're always there.
Absolutely. So, Curtis Lee, New York is out of control. Do not believe the stats. Don't move.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. So glad you're here. We have a big hour coming your way. Senator James Lankford, he, the co-author of the so-called bipartisan immigration bill that would have changed the world if they only would have passed it, if Donald Trump didn't make the call, which he denies doing. Senator James Lankford, always love having him on. Great, one of the greatest people you will meet. And, of course, we have a huge presence in Oklahoma. We're thrilled with that. Howie Kurtz is standing by. And there's a lot of things going on. I'm not ignoring what's going on with the rebuild in North Carolina and South Carolina, Virginia and Florida twice. I'm not ignoring it. We're seeing that go on. But I also know that people see what else is going on, and that is 2024. And also the subplots when it comes to media, how they're handling it, how they're covering it, especially that Kamala Harris is now doing interviews. Which ones? Supposedly easy interviews with The View, with Stephen Colbert, with Howard Stern, the Univision Town Hall, and then 60 Minutes. Joining us now to put in perspective why she's doing it and what she's accomplished by doing it is Howie Kurtz, host of Media Buzz, Sundays at 11 o'clock, and it's repeated as well, and author of Media Madness, Donald Trump, the Press, and the War Over the Truth. Howard, welcome back.
Hey there, Brian.
So, Howie, first off, looking at this, how would you gauge the impact Harris's media blitz has had on the campaign?
Well, the main thing is it's gotten her back in the news, because we were in a situation, even although she got the first, you know, wild ride with the media just gushing over her for a month through the convention, where Donald Trump once again was dominating the news. So she says, okay, I'm going to do a bunch of interviews, but who do I want to talk to? Well, I guess I'll talk to Stephen Colbert and we'll drink beer, because Colbert hosted fundraisers for Joe Biden this year and 4 years ago. The View, those ladies seem nice. And Whoopi Goldberg says, introduces her as the next president of the United States. I wanted to cringe and turn it off, but it's my job to watch these things, Brian. And then Howard Stern, who actually does good interviews and got some good color out of her, but also, you know, even though he used to be pals with Trump, thinks Trump is a disaster for the country and loves Kamala Harris. So it wasn't exactly a high-risk venture. I think she got a little bit out of it, but not all that much.
So I actually think a couple of things that just are going to resonate. People want to know, what are you going to do different than Joe Biden? And if you're not going to do anything different, why don't we have Joe Biden? Because you've never admitted that he has any type of age issue with his brainwaves, whether he's functioning in full capacity. What is the reason? So if you're going to do the same thing as Joe Biden, why do we want someone less experienced who made no impact? And if you're going to be different, you can't be the change. If you're going to be different, fine. But don't answer the question, I'm not going to do anything different than Joe Biden. So people walked away going, why exactly is she the candidate? Well, the poll numbers are up and she's young and she'd be historic. Well, now the poll numbers are no longer up. Looks like we're in a virtual dead heat in all battleground states. I don't see any momentum going for her. And then yesterday, when she's even asked a real question, she doesn't answer it. So when people ask where Joe Biden is, I don't really see her even saying anything about it. Here she's talking about the political games that are going on. Cut three.
We have seen over the last 2 weeks since Hurricane Helene and now in the immediate aftermath of Milton, where people are playing political games, suggesting that resources and support is only going to certain people based on a political agenda. This is just not accurate.
They made the most of this. They made the most of disinformation being the problem. We would dominate press conferences instead of the coverage. And compare that, Howie, with how Governor DeSantis handles misinformation. He says, not important. We know what's going on. I'm in charge. People get monetized conspiracy theories. We all understand that. Move on. But they dug in on this. Why did they dig in on disinformation?
Well, the two hurricanes are, of course, you know, the leading story in the country right now, and serious stuff. And there was already people who have died, and I'm sure there will be more, unfortunately. But Kamala, who, by the way, said that about on The View when she was said, how will your presidency differ from Joe Biden? Not exactly a hard pitch down the middle. And she says, I can't think of a thing. That was not the smartest answer. It shows you that when you do, friendly interviews, you can sometimes make mistakes. But this spinning match, shall we call it, with Governor DeSantis, she says he wouldn't take her calls. He says she didn't know she called. And there is this back and forth now. And it kind of, I find it kind of heartbreaking, regardless of who you think's right, who think you think is wrong, that there is two people, and Biden's in on this too with Trump, trying to use the tragedy of this, of Hurricane Milton, not a really scary name, but certainly a scary hurricane, to play political games. You know, everybody should just put politics aside, damn it, and concentrate on helping people who've lost their homes, who've been displaced, and all of that, Brian.
So I want you to hear what the New York Times said. They noticed that Harris avoids questions, and I'm sure you noticed this too, and they salute her for it. They praise her for it. They said, this week, Ms. Harris put her own stamp on the art of the dodge. Her media swing showed how often she responds to uncomfortable questions by acknowledging them, then yet not fully answering them. She can nimbly field a query and quickly lace her reply with tripwire for her opponent. Really? And a very loyally argumentative and fundamentally defensive. So they're saluting her for not answering questions. It's, I salute you for not playing the political game and using this as an opportunity to assuage people's concerns.
The phrase in the tank occurs to me as I just saw the new cover of the new Vogue magazine. There's Kamala Harris picture on the cover and an endorsement, like, you know, people care what Vogue think about politics. But also, you know, as journalists, look, all politicians know the art of the dodge to some extent.
Sure.
Kamala Harris does it a lot, and she just talks around the question that she doesn't want to answer. She even did it on 60 Minutes. And I don't. And the idea that that was like, oh, let's applaud that. That is just so brilliant on her part. It kind of goes against the grain if you're a real journalist.
So I want you to hear what CBS did and how they handled it 60 Minutes. I can't wait to get your opinion on this. Cut 30 is what the promo said of Kamala Harris sitting down in 60 Minutes with Bill Whitaker. Cut 30.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
Now let me tell you what lets everyone at home hear what we heard on Monday night. Cut 31.
Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We're not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
They both can't be the right answer. They both can't be her answer. They used a different answer to a same question.
Yeah, no, this is absolutely positively embarrassing and raises question about unethical editing. Now, look, all of us in our careers have gone and done hour-long interviews, and then you have 2 minutes for a piece, 5 minutes for a piece,
especially
and you
with
cut
Trump.
It down. That's fine. But it has to be true to what was asked and what was answered. The idea that they would put out that advance clip, the first one you played, and then what they actually aired on 60 Minutes is a completely different answer, is really troubling, and it's part of this whole mess at CBS. And I think CBS should acknowledge that this was a blunder. It makes it undermines confidence in a show that, you know, a 50-year-old news magazine show that has kind of a blue-chip reputation. But that was really a big ethical problem.
So, Howie, the other thing you have is, you know the reality of it. You sit down with someone, you can get them a 5-minute interview, you'll sit down for a half hour. You got to make tough decisions. We do it every day. And especially with Donald Trump, you know, he gives long answers and you want to make some progress when you have tape pieces. This is not what this is. But I'll add something that I glossed over, and in retrospect, which is Allison just reminded me. Do you notice how they voiced over certain sections of this and told us what she said in voiceover in the piece? And you can't tell me you didn't have time because Trump didn't show. You have the whole hour. So what did she really say? So if Catherine Herridge brought up, our former colleague, came up and says, you released my transcript on interviews that I've done, release these.
I suspect that the Harris campaign put a time limit on it because they did have the whole primetime hour. And on the other hand, you know, the whole thing lasted, what, I don't know, 15, 17 minutes. But here's the thing. You can't do that in that way and then represented as being a true answer. It is just you think they would know a lot better, and it's embarrassing. It's and it's a black mark on 60 Minutes.
So I want you to hear this other story. You know, I'm busy in the morning, so I don't know Tony DiCoppo, but he decided to challenge Ta-Hisi Coates' opinion about Israel, that it really shouldn't exist. And he also would go on to later say, just for the record, not in this interview, that he could actually justify the Palestinians doing what they did October 7th of last year. But that's this guy's mindset that everybody loves. But listen to this, and we'll go over the fallout. Cut 35.
It's what I struggled with throughout this book. What is it that so particularly offends you about the existence of a Jewish state that is a Jewish safe place and not any of the other states out there?
There's nothing that offends me about a Jewish state. I am offended by the idea of states built on ethnocracy, no matter where they are.
And he went on to say Gaza is an open prison and that they are the oppressed, and essentially discount that they have any rights at all in their homeland. So I thought this was a podcasty like conversation. If I was one of his co-anchors, I'd be upset because I didn't get to ask any questions. But he got such blowback on that. In fact, the CBS pushed back and apologized, essentially, to the staff and to the viewers for not giving a balanced approach to that interview.
Oh, it didn't meet CBS's editorial standards. Look, few people complain. We've seen this movie before, Brian, and I do know Tony DiCoppo personally. And what he was doing was he was giving the other side. If you want to promote your book, fine. If your book doesn't even mention Hamas terrorism and basically says Israel has no particular right to exist, well, be prepared to take some questions. So some people thought, well, he came on a little strong. Okay, he said, why did you leave out the bus bombings? Why did you leave out this? Why didn't you mention the Intifada? All the things that should have been in the book. And, you know, Coates kept his cool. I'll give him that. But what's happened is there's a senior person at CBS News told us that this is an absolute S show. And what's happened is, you know, now he got humiliated. Tony DiCoppo was humiliated by the top executives there. Rather than deal with it privately, they castigated him at a staff meeting that anybody could come to. Now, the twist here is that Shari Redstone, who controls CBS as the head of the parent company Paramount, came out and criticized her own management team, saying, I was proud of Tony DiCoppo. He did the right thing. He did it in a civil fashion. It was a great interview. So that's what I think. He did his job. He's actually been pilloried for committing the sin of conducting journalism.
Yeah, so I don't know where they go from here. So between that, the 60 Minutes.
No, we're good.
And then telling people, they're journalists, they can't mention Jerusalem at all in Israel, as part of Israel, let alone the capital, which we know it is.
Oh, this memo, and this is from the head of standards of CBS News, to everybody saying, if Jerusalem comes up, you can't say it's in Israel. Well, where the hell is it? On what other country would we go through this kind of thing? I know there are disputes between, you know, the Palestinians claim East Jerusalem and so forth. It's been the case since 1967. Congress has voted, our Congress, to recognize Jerusalem as the capital. Now, you want to qualify that with additional information, fine. But instead, they're sweeping under the rug. And I think the inescapable conclusion, Brian, is that when it comes to the Jewish state, CBS News worrying about, you know, the sort of anti-Israel wing of the Democratic Party and the media party, I guess I would say, has a blatant double standard.
Yeah, Howie, the other thing is you kind of salute Trump for not doing it. It would have been January 6th. It would have been all about 2020, and it would have been the big story, and they would not even have brought up Kamala Harris. So we were smart not to turn him down. Lastly, Hillary Clinton brought up there needs to be control on the internet about what she claims is misinformation. Glenn Greenwald weighed in on that. I want to hear hear what he had to say.
When you look at Western liberalism and, you know, sort of the ruling class of neoliberals in the West, their number one agenda, and I'm not exaggerating, is to regain control of the internet, to find a way to prevent information that they don't want on the internet from reaching large numbers of people, because they understand that that is their huge Achilles heel. And the more independent media thrives, the more a free internet thrives, the more their power is reduced. And that's one of the things I think we're seeing now is they can do everything. Kamala has every advantage. She has over $1 billion she raised, way more than Trump, a much better ground game. All the media on her side, every Hollywood celebrity, every power institution of power, But we're seeing that it doesn't really matter, at least not nearly as much as it used to, because the power is now more diffused because of independent media, because of the internet, which is why that's their number one target to try and control and destroy.
Your thought about his analysis?
Well, Brian, I'd rather take the $1 billion myself. But look, when I was growing up, the Democrats were the party of free speech. Now that has flipped. And Hillary Clinton did come out and say in an interview, it wasn't just some slip of the tongue, that she feels like there needs to be, I mean, I would call it censorship, control of misinformation and disinformation. The problem with that is who controls it? Do you trust the incumbent administration, whether it's Democrat or Republican, to make these judgment calls? And so the idea that you have some authority that's going to make decide what can be published, what can't be published, what can be on social media, what can't be on social media, is really chilling. And I was frankly kind of stunned that Hillary Clinton just came out and said it.
Howie, who's on Media Buzz?
Well, we have a reporter from the Free Press, which has been all over this CBS Tony DeCoppel Israel story, who broke most of this. And he will be on Media Buzz this Sunday, 11 Eastern, on Fox News Channel to talk about the implications of the story that he helped bring to light.
Great. Thanks for hopping into the studio to do it. And Will Cain enjoys the plug in the background, so I'm sure he loves it. His podcast paraphernalia was there, so that's great. Thanks so much, Howie. Have a great show Sunday.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. When we come back, I'll try to squeeze in some calls, 1-866-408-7669. And we have a lot more show to go. And, of course, at the bottom of the hour, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But China, of course, was the biggest abuser. I mean, they were a professional abuser. They did things to us, and they go down as a developing nation. We are a developing nation. Well, we're a developing nation, too. Just take a look at Detroit. Detroit's a developing area, hell of a lot more than most places in China. So we're not going to let this happen any longer.
So that was President Trump yesterday, former President Trump yesterday in Detroit, laying out some new economic proposals, one of which is if you take out a car loan, you don't have to, you're going to get a tax break. So you don't have to pay taxes on the purchase, tax break. But again, he's talking about no taxes on tips, no taxes on that. He's talking about getting rid of the salt tax. He's trying to give working people a break. That was one of his goals. And that is not a lot of people sitting there going, you're in Detroit. It's revitalizing. Don't put it down. But he's trying to say, I see the problem. I think people understand Trump speak. The people there think the city needs to be revitalized in a way that's more market driven. They clap, but people on the outside might say, you're putting down our city. I probably think that's not in the prompter. He ad-libbed that. But when I talk to him, which will probably be in the next 2 weeks on this show, I will definitely bring that up and say, what is your message? Because Detroit, in many ways, is coming back. Pittsburgh, for example, reinvented itself and came back as a tech center. A lot of cities did, but they need the right leadership. And they've had a lot of scandal there with different mayors, and one of which I think is still in jail. But they are beginning to turn around. One thing is pretty true. The excellent chance the Tigers will be playing the Yankees in the next round of the playoffs. So it might come up again. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
1,500 more border agents would have gone to the border. Except Donald Trump got in the way of that bill many months ago, which would mean those many months of more resources going to help those very agents you are talking about. Many months of what could have been happening right now in terms of putting resources into fentanyl and stopping the flow of fentanyl, which we know is killing people every day in America. The trafficking issue, and again, work I have done and care deeply about. So my pledge to you is that by the grace of God and hopefully with your support as well, when I am elected president, I will bring back that border security bill and I will sign it into law.
Well, that is Kamala Harris suddenly showing interest in the border. We couldn't even get her to go to the border. She had to be pushed into going. She did a few Zoom calls with so-called nations that were developing to the point where they were the problem. They were at the core of the problem. So she was going to address that, but nothing else. Does not address all the people on the terror watch list. Tajikistan, we have tons of Afghanis, everyone coming through that border. Now she wants to be tough on the border, and she's using Senator Lankford, Senator Sinema, and Senator Murphy's bill to say that that was the missed opportunity that really matters to her. Joining us now, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. Senator, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Good to talk to you again.
Your thoughts about what she said last night?
Yeah, it's amazing to me that she has now suddenly tried to wrap my bill around her and say, this was my great idea, and I'd love to be able to get this. Literally, she created this problem, and Joe Biden created this problem, and now they're trying to be able to run out and say, you know, this bill that wasn't passed, that was the real solution. They created the problem. They know how to turn it off. In fact, I've been on the border the last 24 hours in Arizona, really, I guess 48 hours in Arizona, got home late last night. It is improving in some ways because guess what they're doing as the election gets closer? They're re-implementing some of the policies that Trump had, and they're putting some of those policies back in place, and magically they're working again. So some of the numbers are coming down, though they continue to allow in 1,600 people a day through their CBP One app every single day coming through the border that they're literally waving through on it. That would end on day one under a Trump administration. So the whole reason we needed a bill was because of their policies. That's why we brought it at all.
So to describe to people, laymen out there that don't do this every day like you do, you could be in another country. You go on that app. You apply for it. It's a basic background check. And then when you get a green light, when to go, and you come to the border, you show them the app, and you get in.
That is correct, except in a couple of ways. We're not really doing a background check because many of these folks, we have no criminal record exchange with our country. Yesterday morning, I was at the border in Arizona and was watching some of the CBP One folks coming through the port of entry there. These are folks that have literally filled out a form online and have said, this is my name, this is what country I'm from. They do a search on an Interpol list and also a list on the terror watch list to determine are they listed there. But then they show up at the border. Many of them don't have a photo ID. They just have an ID that we don't know is really whether it's government issued from their country or not. We don't really know whether it's their name. We had folks yesterday, even I saw, that were from Russia that were coming through. We have no exchange of criminal information from folks from Russia, and they're just doing a quick check on these individuals and allowing them through. And it's frustrating for the folks of the Border Patrol and CBP and all those folks that they really want to be able to protect the country. But the policy that Biden and Harris have created is we're going to let 1,600 people in a day under what's called parole to be able to come in every single day when we really don't know that this is the right person, this is even their ID, or we don't know any of the criminal history of the countries they're coming from.
It's just crazy, Senator. It doesn't seem to be in anyone's interest to let 8 to 9 million people here come across our border illegally, circumvent our system, and let alone the gotaways that don't want to get caught. Who knows what they're up to? And then right. With the Venezuela and the Cuba, maybe Haiti, we have no idea who they are, but they get special compensation to get here, overwhelming these small towns like Springfield. So on your bill, we talked along the way. You were texting me along the way. You work with Senator Murphy on some things and Senator Sinema. Sinema's going to be gone, sadly, because she seemed to be a fair broker as a Democrat who left her party. But when this came out, this was worked on by the three of you. You presented it. Why? You're in a time crunch. Because get it done, no aid goes to Ukraine. People like me think that Ukraine, not a perfect country, but deserves our aid. Everyone said, until you get something done at the border, no aid. So you get it done, and then people say, well, you didn't include me in the process.
Yeah, it was all over the place, and people forget the history of what was going on. You know it extremely well, but October was the highest October in the history of the country for illegal crossings. November was the highest November ever. December was the highest single month and had the highest single day of illegal crossings. We had 12,000 people crossing a day in December. So the whole country was looking at it saying, how do we get this resolved? I'm negotiating with a Democrat Senate that doesn't want to do anything on this, a Democrat White House that doesn't want to do anything on this. And my whole focus was they have the administrative power to dramatically slow down what's happening at the border. But we also need a change in law because there's always been a problem with the asylum process. Right now, under American and our international treaty obligation, someone walks across the border and says, I want asylum. They have to be able to go through that process. And there's an 8-year backlog for that. So what we're able to negotiate was to say the first person that crossed every single day across the border, they would be arrested, they would be quickly screened under a new process, and they would be deported immediately. But if we got 5,000 people that crossed the border, the system's overwhelmed. You can't handle that many people. So we just arrested and deported everybody at that point to turn them around. It was a intense negotiation, but I felt it was a way to be able to make the administration do what they were unwilling to do and to be able to change the rules for every president in the future that were able to be able to turn that around. Now, there were a lot of folks on my party that said, hey, I want to do more. I want to do more deportations in the country. I want to do other things. And I'm with you. There are a lot of things that were not in that bill that I would love to have had even more. But there was no amnesty in the bill. There were a lot of things that we really aimed for not in the bill.
Right.
But we didn't get everything we wanted. But we had to decide whether we can get nothing, something, or everything. We ended up getting nothing. But amazingly, then Biden and Harris decided they're going to start, because the election's getting closer, they're going to start re-implementing some of those same policies at the border to slow things down, which has slowed us down to about 3,000 a day. But we're still a long way from where we were under Donald Trump, or even under Barack Obama. We're still a long way from that.
Right. Of course, more border agents. Everyone prefers that. But have stricter asylum questioning. You have to prove that you are under attack and that your life's in jeopardy, right, not go to a different part of the country. But there was nothing for unaccompanied minors.
Right.
And that really
right.
bothered you. They were not going to finish the wall, and that really bothered you. And, you know, it was something that should have been debated. The other thing, Senator, before I move on, because we have a lot to talk about, is you were not going to get Democratic support. Not only was it going to be tough to get Republicans, Democrats weren't buying onto this. So for people to say if you put it to a vote without amendments, it was going to pass is insane.
Yeah, there were a lot of Democrats that were not supportive of this as well, that they're now kind of turning out and trying to rewrite history on it, that, hey, we were behind it the whole time on it. They absolutely were not. There's a reason it took 4 months to negotiate this bill, because they never wanted to do it in the first place.
So Tara watch list in 2021, 173 crossed, 478 in 22, 726 in 23. We already got 469 this year. So if you're not worried, now in Oklahoma, a 27-year-old Afghani that was cleared by the CIA to work for the CIA got here in 9 days after Afghanistan was turned over to the Taliban, because Biden thought it would be a great idea. It turns out this guy's working with ISIS, planning a major attack on Election Day. Your thoughts about that in the most patriotic state in the country, Oklahoma?
Yep, it is, actually. And that literally this person, and there were two people that were picked up. They were picked up literally down the street from me here in Oklahoma City. That this person had not been fully vetted through the process and had gotten through the system. Now, I've been aware of it. I serve on the Intelligence Committee, serving on the Homeland Security Committee. FBI has been on this for a while since they identified the threat. They were able to scoop this person up. But he was in the process of buying 500 rounds of ammunition, two AK-47s, and was outspoken to say this is what he plans to do. He plans on dying as a martyr and killing as many Americans as he can on Election Day. So a couple of things on this. One is we got to remain vigilant. There are people around the world that hate our freedom. They flat out hate our freedom. And so we've got to continue to remain vigilant of who's coming across the border and who is some person that's here, as this individual was, to be able to actually do us harm. The second thing is that this is another sign of this chaotic withdrawal that Biden led. We had people that got in through the system that had not been fully vetted. While most Afghans fought alongside of us, and they were fighting terrorism as well, we did have some people that got through.
No doubt about it. I said he's accused of planning the terror attack. He worked as a CIA security job, which means to a degree he's already been examined and they missed it, which is crazy.
I want to tell you a little bit of detail on that. There'll be more detail that will come out about this that is quote-unquote work for the CIA. Just give it some time and some facts will come out on that.
Real quick, you went to the HHS facility for unaccompanied minors yesterday. How are they being treated? Everybody cares about children. There's nobody who doesn't, but what's going on there?
Yeah, it is. I was there actually a couple of days ago there, and they're treating the children very well. They're walking through that process. Now, a couple things to remember. When we talk about children, almost all the children are 15, 16, 17-year-olds that are coming through.
Oh.
And so in Central America and other places, those are considered adults. Once you're 15, you're considered adult in many countries. In the United States, you kind of become an adult when you want to. That's a whole another conversation for a different time. But they're all being treated very well. The challenge that we have is it's incredibly expensive when you have an open border like we have. For every child, you've got three adult workers for every single child. So you do the math of how much money that is and the right. care for each of these children. And their placement is a whole nother issue.
So you work with Kamala Harris when she was Senator Harris. What kind of senator was she? What stood out?
We served on the Intelligence Committee together for that short time. Remember, she wasn't in the Senate very long at all before she moved over and started running for president literally immediately after she got into the Senate. But she's personable as an individual as far as someone to be able to talk to. But obviously, policy-wise, she was far left of Bernie Sanders even. And everyone's trying to look at her record, and she's trying to rewrite her record from when she was in the Senate. But everyone should look how she voted in the bills that she put in place when she was in the Senate. She literally was the most liberal senator in the Senate when she was there, even surpassing Bernie Sanders. So look at her record and what she did rather than what she's saying now.
So right now, we understand that there's an excellent chance that you guys will be in the majority in the Senate, at which time you have a few people jockeying to be the leader. One is Tim. One is Rick Scott. One is Senator Thune. We know that I think there's another senator.
Senator Cornyn. Yep,
Senator Cornyn. So right. I understand that people like Senator Lee are starting to do deals that were done in the House. If I vote for you, you better do X, Y, and Z. Have you heard about some of these deals?
Yeah, that would be common. By the way, your lips to God's ears on Republicans being in the majority in the Senate. It's looking better and better, but Americans have got to show up and vote and actually be engaged. And we will desperately need people to be able to get there to their polls, to be able to vote, mail-in vote, do in person. What is legal in your state, do that. But get out there. But, yeah, we've got three people that are jockeying for us. An intramural election is different than any other kind of election. In the House and the Senate, the elections are even done differently. In the House, you elect the Speaker of the House. They've got to have the majority of the entire body to be elected. In the Senate, it is just the majority of the majority. So if there are 51 Republican senators, it takes 27 of them to actually elect the majority leader. So it's a very different process on actually selecting than it is in the House. But there'll be a lot of back and forth to say, hey, here are the things that I want. The key things are you going to protect the filibuster? Are you going to be able to bring bills out for an amendment, or are we going to have a closed process where legislators are not able to actually legislate? Are we going to actually be able to bring things to the floor and debate them? These are things that have not happened of late. And Senator Lee and multiple others, myself included, have just asked very simple questions of the people running for majority leader. Hey, are we going to have a Senate that actually functions and legislators that actually get to legislate?
Right. Okay. So the side deals that blew up Kevin McCarthy eventually, you kind of hope that doesn't happen again. I think it's embarrassment. No. It hurts the country, actually.
No, it does hurt the country on it, and I hope the House is able to resolve all the issues for them on putting their Speaker of the House in. But for the Senate, it's a very different process than it is for the House for that election.
How do you feel about right now with this race, with several coming down to seven battleground states? We know it's going back and forth, momentum here, there. What are you sensing, Senator?
Well, I'm sensing a lot of positive momentum. Trump continues to gain momentum in many of these battleground states. What we have seen over the past two presidential elections is every election but one, actually, whoever won the presidency in that election also won the Senate race in that election. The only exception to that was actually Susan Collins. She won in Maine when Biden also won in Maine. But typically, if the president, whoever the presidential party is that wins that state, also wins the Senate seat in that state. And so I have to tell you, states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Montana, Nevada, Arizona, we can go on and on and on. There's many states that are out there that Trump continues to be able to gain on, which continues to be able to help our Senate candidates as well.
Right. You know, he goes out of his way, I'm sure you noticed, to say, you know, I don't like the bill, but he's a good man. The senator's a good man. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. I have noticed that. In fact, there have been times that he's met with all Republican senators, even the last couple of months. He said, hey, we're not going to agree on everything, but let's find a way to be able to work together. We've got to be able to solve these things. And I've said, that's exactly the attitude that we need. We have a diverse party. There are Republicans in Northeast, as you know well, in New York, Republicans are different than Oklahoma Republicans on it. But all right, we got to have everybody to be able to come to the table to be able to resolve the big, tough issues in the country.
Always great to talk to you, Senator Lankford. Appreciate it.
Do bad. Good to visit with you again, Brian.
You got it. Meanwhile, just quick note. It's coming up October 20th. I'll be in Peekskill, New York. History, liberty, and laughs. I'll be able to take your questions. We'll talk about what's happening. But most of all, it's going to be a patriotic, inspirational, motivational night. I get a chance to go through our American history through my books and more. And we have a great time. and we bring history to life. So BrianKilmeade.com, VIP opportunities available. This way I can meet you with it before. And I also sign books. We've got some surprises. October 20th, Peekskill, New York, BrianKilmeade.com.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
All right, here we go. It's time to find out if you need to know more. California just passed a bill allowing alcohol sales inside of an exclusive club with the L.A. Clippers Stadium until 4 a.m.? Who could drink until 4 a.m.? They got an exemption. Why? Could it have been because Connie Ballmer, who's married to the owner of the Clippers, donated $1 million to Gavin Newsom's campaign? Do you think there's a link?
I mean, it was the only single exemption in L.A. that you can drink until 4. Everywhere else closes at 2.
Next, Yahoo Sports and The Athletic are teaming to create a women's sports hub on the Yahoo Sports website and app, directing fans to written audio and video content produced by Yahoo Sports and Athletic, two powerful entities. The additions to shows include The Athletic Women's Basketball Show, The Full Time with Meg Linen, and The Hub, which showcase original reporting from The Athletic's Gabby Herzig. The question is, will women go to this? You know what I say? Don't count on men all the time.
That's true. I mean, it's the point. I mean, at least maybe from the WNBA now getting, like, record ratings and attendance, they're hoping to build on that. But otherwise, I'm not sure if it's going to work.
Marshawn Lynch, the former NFL star running back, Super Bowl champ, hinted at a possible run for mayor of Oakland. Is it possible to straighten out Oakland? Both Gavin Newsom and the longtime agent Doug Hendrickson encouraged Lynch to do it. Beast Mode, that was his nickname. Lynch addressed the potential opening at Oaklanders Way, recall of scandal plague Mayor Shang Theo. Now think about this. Oh, she's a mess too. Oakland lost the Athletics. They're going to Las Vegas. They lost the Raiders going away. They've lost everything. The place is a shambles. It is a mess. It's being ignored. It's being abandoned. Can Marshawn Lynch change things? He's got to go with his eyes open, though. He's got to realize how the system works. He is very well respected, I'll tell you that. And he's just here because he won't get fined.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.